GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. This is the George Hale Rick Tyler Show. Augusta's going around the whole death with dignity mountain again, George.
Yep.
We did this last session and it didn't pass. It's back again. We received a note via social media, actually, from Laura Parker, who is in Sydney this morning. Laura, I have it that you're a registered nurse. Laura, welcome to our program. This is the George Hale Rick Tyler Show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to meet you. The backers of LD 1313 think that they've changed all of the problems they had in the earlier versions of this, and now they can get this passed. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's still a lot of issues with this legislation. And honestly, if you were able to take out all of the issues that were brought before the committee on Wednesday, I don't think you'd have a bill left, to be honest.
What are some of the issues that you see with LD 1313? Or maybe it's at its very foundation that someone would be able to with the assistance of a physician end their life.
With this particular bill as it was presented this time around, the major issues are that people who are supporters of this legislation have good intent, and most people want to alleviate the suffering of people who have a terminal illness, but they don't really know what the actual language contains or how somebody might go about achieving doctor-prescribed suicide under this legislation, for example. Most patients seeking to utilize this law are not given a single pill, which is kind of the understanding, or that they're going to be given a lethal injection of a concoction of medication. This bill is modeled almost completely after the law in Oregon. And in Oregon, the most people who have committed suicide under this law have to ingest 100 pills, not a single pill. And most people don't understand that. And I think this picture that somebody's going to take a single pill, they're going to be assisted by their long-term primary care physician, and that they're going to slip peacefully into a sleep is just not the reality as it plays out in Oregon. And the thing that people don't understand also is that the average length of doctor-patient relationship for those patients is just 10 weeks in Oregon. So it's not really your long-term care primary care physician that would be assisting you with this.
When it was tried before, there were a lot of problems with it. This new bill, and I'm not very expert on it, just what I've read, does allow for consultations, waiting periods. They have to have a terminal disease that would result in death in 6 months. Two doctors have to confirm the patient meets the requirements. The patient has to request it three different times, has to be witnessed by two people, one of whom is not related, can't have a financial interest. They've tried to put every roadblock in there that they can, but in your view, that's not enough, right?
That's correct. And two of the things that you mentioned just now were terminal illness and the witnesses to these requests for the prescription. So with regards to terminal illness, the language of the law says that a terminal illness is an incurable and an irreversible disease. It doesn't mention whether or not that's with or without treatment. And it's been evidenced in other states who have utilized that incurable diseases could include things like diabetes, kidney disease, liver disease, COPD, and a variety of heart ailments. And people have also indicated the illness of arthritis as a reason for ending their life under this law. And so it is a little misleading to say that it's terminal illness, because a lot of illnesses that people deal with on a regular basis that if they were left unmedicated would be terminal in much less than 6 months. With regard to the witness, what you stated is correct. However, there's nothing in the language that would prevent the two witnesses that are required from being the consulting physician, and as you stated, George, someone who stands to gain financially from the demise of this person. It is very clear in the language that while one of those witnesses can't be that person, one of them absolutely can. And so I don't think that that is a good enough safeguard for the elderly and potentially a very abusable population in our state.
In a moment, we want to ask who might your allies be in opposing this death with dignity bill under consideration in Augusta. We're talking with Laura Parker. She's in Sydney here on the PDQ Door telephone line for the George Hale Rick Tyler Show. I wonder if there's any other state that has successfully fought against with death with dignity bill. And if you are looking at their playbook, just as supporters of this bill are looking to other states where they do have the law in place, Laura.
Because the legislation is modeled almost entirely after Oregon, which is admitted by its main sponsor, we are mostly looking at what's happening in Oregon. There's a lot of different states that have varying degrees of this types of legislation, but the vast majority of states do not allow doctor-prescribed suicide.
I think there are about six states that do in one form or another. Even where it is legal, Oregon being the one that everybody looks at, they've had it on the books for over 20 years. And during that period of time, actually, only about 1,400 people have taken advantage of the law to end their own life. So it's a relatively small number of people who go on this road. Is that fair?
That is fair. And I think that that statistic lends itself to people thinking that this will affect only a handful of Mainers. And what has been evidenced in other states is that even though a very small percentage of their populations actually choose to use doctor-prescribed suicide as a way of prematurely ending their life, that when other patients who are seeking treatment for an incurable disease, their insurance companies have denied their claims and said, we will not cover this life-sustaining treatment. But for example, one mother who was actually not in Oregon, she's in California, was seeking life-sustaining treatment and was denied, but was offered death by prescription for a copay of $1.20. And so while the percentage of people seeking to utilize is small, it absolutely affects the entire population.
Laura, we're wondering who your allies might be. We saw some news coverage of those who have great concern with this death with dignity bill under consideration in Augusta. Who's alongside of you? Are there other organizations, other individuals?
Well, on Wednesday, when this legislation was heard at the public hearing, I actually did represent a very broad coalition of bipartisan individuals. I think that the standard people who come out to the State House to oppose the so-called death with dignity bills that have come before are absolutely there. But it's important to note just how broad the opposition is. And we did have a Democrat representative, Margaret Craven, who testified on Wednesday, and she has been a long-term advocate for both women's rights and patient and disability rights, and as evidenced by the last time that this was voted on in the 128th legislature, it absolutely has bipartisan opposition.
Rick indicated that you are an RN, and I'm sure you know, have a lot of medical training. It's a very difficult subject, I think, and within any family, you could probably find two or three different opinions. Is your opposition to this philosophical, or is it more medical? Because I think all of us have kind of mixed emotions about a law like this.
Absolutely. It is a very difficult topic, and I think that one of the overlying testimonies from both the opposition and the proponents of this legislation at public hearing was that no matter what, we need to get a little bit more comfortable with talking about the reality of death in our lives. So it absolutely is a difficult conversation. As far as myself, yes, I am a registered nurse. I've practiced in Maine in oncology and hospice, and I think that my job as a nurse is to advocate for all of my patients. And what we discussed previously is that what looks like something that will affect only a handful of Mainers could affect all of my patients. And it's my job to advocate for them in that. And I think that what we're doing is we are really looking to not, this isn't just a bill about changing the law, but it's a way if it passes, then we will be changing the way that we practice medicine in our state. And I don't think that it's necessary to turn all of our medical practice on its head for legislation that is just fatally flawed.
Laura, a listener asks us to ask you a question, as you are more familiar with this law than anyone in this conversation right now. This listener writes to us in a text, "What about psychological consultation? I wonder where's advocacy for mental health in regards to making this decision. I would think these folks have to make this decision and being of sound mind. Of all of the components, of all of the restrictions, of all of the hurdles put in place by LD, I believe you said, George, it was 1313, LD 1313. Of all of the
1313.
Of all of the hurdles put in place for someone to exercise this right where it made a law, was there anything that says anything about, okay, you've got to go have a psychological consultation to make sure you're of sound mind?
That's a fantastic question. So the way that the legislation is written is that even if you have an underlying psychological illness or depression in your life, which is, you know, it's very common illness that people have, it is not required that you get a consultation. The attending physician who is looking over your request will make a judgment call about whether or not they think that at the time that you are of sound mind. Interestingly, last year, almost 250 people in Oregon, for example, made this request, but only 3 people, which is less than 2%, were actually referred to have a consult with a mental health professional, which is very concerning to me because this is a huge decision, and sometimes people can, you know, waver in and out of having worsening depression, feeling, you know, in a state of hopelessness, and that may or may not change as they go along. So while it says that the person must be of sound mind when they make this request, it is absolutely not mandatory that they be evaluated by a mental health professional.
And a final question. In the years that we've talked about this off and on again, people have contacted us through email and text and said, look, if I'm living pain, I don't want to continue this life. Why should the state, why should the government say I can't end my life?
Well, the unfortunate reality of the society that we live in is that anyone can choose to end their own life at any time for any reason. And we go to great lengths to prevent that from happening in a lot of our populations, veterans, teens. I believe that you recently had someone on that was talking about a bill that would change the way that we tax alcohol with the intention of preventing suicide. And yet here we are with one of our most vulnerable populations saying that we're okay with it. And so that on its face has always been kind of an interesting concept to me. But the autonomy of an individual with a terminal illness or with an incurable or illness is never taken away. People always have this option. But as I stated, it's not what people think that it is. A lot of people are very surprised to find that they can't just take a pill, that they have to take 100 pills. And a lot of people don't understand all of the logistics that go into a law like this. And so it's more than just an individual's right to take their own life through doctor prescription. It's about the entire state and what's good and for the entire state.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.